We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, happy Friday. And we are just about exactly a month out from the 2024 election. It is finally here. And this has been coming for a long time. I think that everyone started talking about 2024 as soon as 2020 was over. And it seems like we are just in the midst of a perpetual election cycle here in America. But this one feels a lot different just because of the worldview contrast, where we are as a country, where we are potentially headed as a country in either a better or worse direction, and also where the state of the world is with the conflict going on in the Middle East, and then just where the culture is in terms of the worldwide church as well, and those who are actually Christ followers, and the state of the church, which unfortunately, you know, I don't think is ultimately very good right now in America for a variety of reasons, and that has had an impact on the culture. So a lot to discuss this morning as we are situated about 4 weeks out from the 2024 election. So let's welcome in fan favorite Steve Dace, host of The Steve Dace Show on Blaze TV. And Steve, you know, where do you want to begin? I mean, this is just, you know, where do you see that we sit as a country on the precipice of the 2024 election?
Well, I think there are two trend lines. Pardon me, Jenna. There are two trend lines that have been pretty consistent this cycle that I think we have to address up front, because they're different than what we've seen in Trump's previous two runs. And when a guy is, you know, this is the first time in the modern mass media era we've seen someone be a nominee for a party three times. It has not happened since FDR. So, and we were in the midst of World War II at that point. So you would think, especially given the fact the guy might have been the biggest celebrity in the world even before he ran, you would think, how can there be anything new? Right. But there are two new things that are occurring. Number one, Trump is polling ahead of where he was at this juncture of the race in his previous two campaigns. And by several points in the polling averages, not just by, you know, a half a point, but by 3 to 4 points, depending on which polling average you look at. That's pretty significant. 3 to 4 points is a pretty significant move in a general election either way. So that is a wowza. Okay. Number two, for the first time in Trump's political ascendancy, he is polling ahead of the Republican Party brand. The Republican Party generic congressional ballot polling has been well behind Trump this entire cycle. Most of all of the battleground state Republican candidates for governor and senator, all of them, are polling behind Trump, some of them in Nevada, Arizona, North Carolina, drastically behind Trump. Okay. And even in 2016, every GOP Senate candidate finished ahead of Trump in their state when he won. In 2020, Trump, we're told, lost, but Republicans gained in the House, remember? So this is the first time that he has ever, the brand of Trump has taken preeminence over the brand of the Republican Party. And I think when we look at those two things, I think we have to ask why. There's some potential answers. Let me tell you which one is not a potential answer, and I won't even entertain for a second intellectually. the idea that the pollsters don't want to be wrong again, and so they're overestimating Trump this time to compensate for being wrong, and they want to reestablish their credibility, full stop. They don't care about their credibility. These are corporate media outlets. They would take every member of your audience, and they would mainline sewer rot right into their mouths and tell them it's raining, okay? That's what they think of people who don't agree with them. That's what they think of our audiences. That's what they think of us. They don't care about their credibility. This has been established. I don't know. If that's what you think, then you haven't paid attention to the previous 7 million examples to indicate you're wrong. So I don't know what giving you any more would do at this point. So that's not what's happening here. So then I think we are left with some other options to determine why that is the case. And I have a hypothesis. I'm not quite to theory stage yet. But I am beginning to wonder if what we're seeing in this cycle is the normie backlash election we thought we were going to get in 22. And, you know, for those of us who thought we were going to get a red wave, and for me, who I thought we'd actually go even further with a red wedding, it's because the Republican base was more energized than the Democratic base. Biden was underwater on every conceivable issue. And I thought that you, just like you'd see in many midterms, you know, and you see it for both sides. You saw it work against us in 2006, and for example, when Nancy Pelosi took over as Speaker, or 2018 when Trump lost 40 House seats. You saw it work for us with the Contract with America, or the two Tea Party midterms in the Obama years. That 2 to 3, 4, 5 point of normie slash independent voter, they're not always the same, but there are a lot of times they are. They are also disgusted at the direction of the country, and they come off the top rope and give you the margins you need for these wave elections and these midterms. Well, our base did show up. We did win the generic congressional ballot by about what the polling said. The polling in 22 was actually pretty accurate where that was concerned, but we didn't get that normie vote. It was closer, but we lost that normie independent vote by a few points, and those few points were the differences in almost every one of these states where Republicans underperformed. And I thought we'd get that vote in 22, Jenna, because they were turned off by Trump. Trump was not on the ballot. They don't have to vote for him. They just have to render a verdict, a referendum on Biden. We didn't get that. And now I'm beginning to think it's possible that we're going to get that now because it's the only thing that I can come up with that can explain these two polling trends. That a lot of people a lot of those normies are maybe thinking, you know, I don't like Trump at all, but how much damage can he do in one term? We got to get these people out of there, get some stability restored, and we'll just let the Democrats, you know, we'll give them the House and a slim GOP majority, largely made up of, you know, anti-Trump Republicans, frankly, to hold his feet to the fire, because we just can't go on with Joe Biden's senility, and then the same people that lied to us about that are now telling us that we should vote for a woman that didn't win a single Democrat primary or delegate in her lifetime to become the nominee. That's the only thing I can think of to explain this, because Trump's overall favorables are still underwater. So it's not like a bunch of people have suddenly decided they like him. It's the only thing I can think of to explain those two trends that remain present. The thing that I am the most concerned about, organic events that we cannot control, I am not concerned about. I'm really good at not worrying about the things I can't control. I'm the opposite of most people. It's the things I think I can control that I struggle not to worry about. What I am concerned about is our turnout operation around the country. It has been farmed out to all these third-party groups. And I mean, listen, the Republican Party get out the vote effort has been anemic for decades, but at least it was a C-. We don't know what these groups will do. They might be great. We don't know. I've got numerous conflicting reports on the ground from people I know involved with them around the country, but they're all unproven, and they're up against a well-oiled turnout machine called the Democratic Party. And that's the thing that I am concerned about, is that we get outperformed on the ground. And even before we get to the ballot harvesting, election stealing stuff, I go back to a special election in Ohio a few months ago in a plus 26 Trump district.
So we control all the election machinery there. They can't just illegally ballot harvest there. And we only won that special election by 8 points. And that tells me that if they can manifest that level of ground game advantage, even in areas where we have control, they have us way out organized. And so I am concerned that come game day, can we actually get and mobilize these numbers into actual voters? That's the biggest concern I have.
Yeah, and I would share that concern as well. I mean, even if we take at face value some of these districts that that some of these people like Scott Pressler are working really hard to get more registered voters, and even if there are more registered voters now in some of these counties like Pennsylvania that have, you know, like two of the top three in Pennsylvania now have more registered Republicans than registered Democrats, and he posted that a couple weeks ago on X. That doesn't guarantee that all of those newly registered voters will get out and vote, or that they would even vote for Donald Trump, or that they would vote GOP all the way down ticket. I mean, there's just no way to predict that, and turning out the vote has always been just... The GOP just really likes to be in the minority for so many different reasons. I mean, I still remember, you know, one of the RNC lawyers said on a call to another colleague, and she told me about it, saying, you know, that, doesn't really matter if Trump wins. And, you know, this was in 2020. I mean, we fundraise more when a Democrat's in office anyway. And that just, to me, shows the attitude of the traditional GOP. And I think where your theory, Steve Dace, is right on point is that so many people who genuinely care about the future trajectory of this country are really frustrated with how much the GOP loses for conservatives. I mean, you look at this current Congress, they couldn't even get the SAVE Act passed. They've caved on basically right. everything, even with a, right. yeah, it's a very slim majority, but they're not using it for anything. And so
right.
because Kamala Harris is such a dangerous candidate in terms of her worldview, then that matters. But then people are saying, you know, but we don't want to vote for the GOP that does absolutely nothing for this country. So that is an interesting contrast. But ultimately, I think it's a little more dangerous to have an extreme Democrat majority that's going to want to do things like, you know, push through amnesty for illegals. They're going to want to thwart, any sort of America First plan at any turn. So where do you think the lines are in terms of encouraging people to actually vote American values all the way down ticket?
I think that, I grew up in a home, Jenna, with an abusive stepfather, and he wasn't always like that. There were times he was a great dad, but when he was stoned or drunk, the lows were very low, and he could be very violent to me, my little brother, my mom. And when you get in that situation year after year, if he was violent to my mom, I would try to say to my mom, "We have to leave." And she would be like, "We have nowhere else to go." If he was violent to me or my brother, you know, my mom would be like, "We have to go." And then we'd be like, "We have nowhere else to go." You just realize, you sit there and you think, who else would take us? No one else would want us. We have nowhere else to go. At least he did. He provided. He did. We had a roof over our head. We weren't homeless. But you're in a situation here where you're being abused and taken advantage of, and eventually that debases you to the point that you are convinced you have nowhere else to go. This is a metaphor. My life situation is a metaphor for what life has been like in the Republican Party for people like us. And this idea that, you know, and I see this with some of the DeSantis people that I was aligned with in this primary. They think that by sitting this thing out, they're saving a party that never existed. This party never existed. People that you're trying to save something that never happened. Okay. I mean, I can run down the records of Romney and all the Bushes and the McCains, and they're beyond dreadful. Trump's record, for all the complaints I had about him during the primary, because DeSantis clearly had a superior record, Trump's record is clearly superior to all of theirs. Okay, this is actually better than what it used to be. They thought that the people that you talked to at the RNC thought like that long before 2020. I've gone up against this my entire career. And you saw what happened when Mitt Romney got to the Senate and John McCain went back to the Senate when they didn't have to lie to conservatives anymore to get their votes across the country. You saw what kind of senators they became again. McCain, his deathbed vote was the passing of Obamacare. He was the deciding vote. He voted. He came back on his freaking deathbed to pass that. That was his parting shot, like Khan firing the Genesis device with his last gasp in Star Trek II. All right, one last unto the breach to my own base. You see how terrible of a senator Romney has been. Just a flat-out quisling. And this is what we've been aligned with for years. And the tension we have now is that a lot more people are waking up to it, and that's good. But now their solution is to do the things we should have done 20 years ago, and now it's too late now. All right, we're in an open civil war now. They're openly trying to assassinate the guy that is our nominee, okay? Just right out in the open. All right, they're putting prayers in prison. All right, we've taken in over 4 million people illegally over the border the last 2 years. 4 million, Jenna, that's more people that live in my home state of Iowa, okay? 4 million. I mean, it's too late now. The stuff that everyone said I was a radical and tried to keep me from having a larger voice on the right because I didn't want to support these people, that we had to save America to vote for Mitt Romney, which is just beyond ridiculous. All the stuff that I was an outcast for, and why we have a running joke that I'll never speak at CPAC for saying these things. Now, suddenly, when it's too late, a bunch of people who ignored people like me 15, 20 years ago, now suddenly, with a guy who at least did accomplish a few things, up against open Marxism at the brink of the end of the country, now suddenly want to, we got to lose to win. There's no win here other than a win. There is no win here other than a win. You are dealing with Soviets. They will take all the power granted to them, and they will use it, and they will impose upon you everything that they possibly can. The traditional left-right Venn diagram, all that is gone now. This is a civil war now, and you're part of a coalition now. You may not like your coalition. Most days, I don't either. You know what I like a lot less, though? The other coalition. I like that. I don't like anything about that. And, you know, I kind of like wars better when my side wins and your side loses, you know? And I long for the days. I hope we can go back and relitigate, you know, where we went wrong and what to do about this. The good news is if we lose this election, we're all going to have a lot of time to do that in gulags and, banned from every social media platform and taken out of the public discourse. We'll have lots of time then to pontificate the lint in our navels. But the reality is now the war is here, okay? Here's the new paradigm, survive or not. Survival, that's your new paradigm. Your new paradigm isn't, who's the most right-wing guy? I did all those arguments for years. I tried. I was just a guy from Des Moines. People didn't want to listen to people like me. And we had to put Romney on the cover of National Review. And we had to have John McCain with the Stephen Schmidt you saw on MSNBC all these years railing against the right. That was John McCain's campaign manager, for goodness sakes. Okay? No, we had to sleep through all of that. Well, it's too late now. It's too late for your protest now. You missed it. All right? The battle now is the Visigoths are coming over the wall. That is the battle now. And so here's the terms, survival or not. Those are the terms. There are no other terms, at least not right now.
Yeah, and lest you think that Steve is just painting a doom and gloom picture, I think that you are not exaggerating. That this moment in history is so critical to the United States. Will we persist for at least another 4 years, being at least more free than if the communists take over, or will we allow a total and utter transformation of America? And we have to take a break here, Steve Dace, but we will continue to talk about this on the flip side of the break, because you know, if you don't understand world history and you've never studied it, then you may think that America just will continue in the way that we always have, and we will just have the blessings of liberty because this is the way that we've always been used to. Well, world history has not shown that that is the case. We are a novelty here in America to have the blessings of liberty that we have, and we fought dearly for them, and we have to continue to fight for them. And I think you're absolutely right to say that this is a type of civil war. So we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning with my good friend Steve Dace. You can follow him on X and also listen to the Steve Dace Show. We'll be right back with more. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And we are speaking truth and some harsh truths, I think, but hopefully in love and in a desperate call, I think, to Americans to wake up and to understand where we are at this critical moment. And, you know, before the break, Steve Dace, my special guest this morning, you know, we were talking about how we are on the precipice of potentially losing America as we know it, and basically being taken over by this communist regime, this Marxist worldview. And it's not an exaggeration to say that another 4 years of what we have endured in the last 4 years is likely not survivable. Because if you look at the censorship, if you look at the lawfare, if you look at the targeted use of power to go against political opponents and Christians intentionally, specifically for exercising our faith and views that the left finds abhorrent. I mean, we just talked yesterday about how John Kerry was saying that, you know, democracies are too cumbersome when we have things like the U.S. Constitution and the First Amendment, that people can actually go out and listen to programs like this one and like yours and get what they would deem as misinformation, because we talk about the biblical worldview, and that's a bad thing, according to them. That is utterly disqualifying in a nation like ours. And yet we see that the polls are saying that this is such a razor thin margin. It is mind blowing to me. If that is true, Steve, if it is true that this is a razor thin margin, that means that roughly 50% of the people that live in this country, you know, whether they're legal or not, who, you know, when we can have that conversation, are actually thinking that communism is better than freedom. That's just mind boggling to me.
This is the thing why we're out of time for long-term plans. We are at the juncture of the game right now where the other side, to use a basketball analogy, the other side's on a scoring run, and we need a timeout to stall their momentum. And we're still going to be behind when we come back out after the timeout. But at least there's time to take a deep breath and recalibrate and reassess. And to me, that's what this election is. They are weaponizing. They are nearly complete with their Gramsci long march through the institutions. They are weaponizing these institutions. You're even seeing it when it comes to disaster relief in parts of the Bible Belt right now. Okay, this everything is aligned to undo our way of life. And I have had a meaningful conversation with Donald Trump in 8.5 years. Never been to Mar-a-Lago, never gotten an orange check in the mail. okay? So I'm just the guy who understands, tries to understand the signs of the times and know what to do about them. If anything, Donald Trump's ascendancy has cost me money, okay? I was one of the first people they ever offered a job to. I turned it down, all right? I then went and opposed him all the way to the convention with Free the Delegates, all right? I've got nothing. I've gained nothing personal from this era whatsoever, all right? Nothing. I've got my butt kicked in two primaries against him. I have nothing personal to gain here, all right? I'm just a guy who loves my country, loves my Lord, loves my family, and is a student of history. It's not about him. It's about us. I don't think they're shooting at him because he's got narcissistic personality disorder and easy to beat. And in the end, you know, he'll delegate everything and he'll cave. You know, you don't shoot at the guy if you think that's the entirety of your enemy. It's because Donald Trump represents a beachhead, Jenna. And this is not a theological metaphor. It's a situational one. In some respects, there's been a lot of debate on our side, in our camp over the years, is Trump Nebuchadnezzar. I couldn't believe there were Christian leaders that thought that was complimentary. Just read a Bible once, okay? Is Trump Samson. That's one I've used a lot. And I think there's a lot of parallels there. The miscreant who can't stay out of who's got a rewards card at the Canaanite brothel, but he also tears the temple of Dagon, down into and plunges their fish demon down of the Philistines down into the dirt at the same time. But I think from a political standpoint, the reason why the system is so concerned about him is they see him as a John the Baptist forerunner, that he will, he's a crazed disruptor that came out of nowhere. But what comes after him is this, that the thing, what he will, well, he will set the stage for. Look at the polished way. J.D. Vance actually, for the first time, many Americans saw a sane, sober, mature, engaging, relatable articulation of Trump's agenda for the first time in 9 years the other night. And it just absolutely, and you saw the way their media reacted to that debate. It put them in a meltdown. You saw how much of Trump's persona they need to prop themselves up, because when they look at the issues he raises, aside from his persona, it completely destabilizes their paradigm. Look at what our guy, Governor DeSantis, has done governing in Florida. All right, you want to know one of the reasons why they've ignored all the suffering in the Carolinas? Because DeSantis did such a good job in Florida, he didn't give them a story, so they just moved on, because they don't want to highlight the Democratic governor's failures. So they're just going to ignore all the suffering going on there. That's why we're not getting Hurricane Katrina-level coverage of this. And there's no Governor DeSantis. He never gets elected governor without Trump's endorsement down there. That's what they're concerned about. What they're concerned, it's not so much with this 78-year-old guy who is just as prone to go off about crowd size as it is built as, you know, securing the border. They're not so much concerned about him as an individual, but what the people behind him in the movement that he is the forerunner for and the front man for, and what that represents. And that if he is allowed a beachhead into the system, then he'll plant more people. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, governor of Arkansas. I remember Sarah, wasn't too long ago, she was getting us donuts during the Hawkeye Caucus campaign for old man. Now she's a fantastic governor. Again, no chance she'd ever been governor of Arkansas without Trump. This, again, is what they're concerned about, Jenna. They're concerned that they know, given his age and personality, he is a short stock. What they're worried about, J.D., 39. Ron DeSantis, 45, okay? Sarah Sanders, I don't think, is Sarah even 40 yet? That's what they're worried about, is that a generation of real resistance is now coming in behind him, people who are sane, competent, know what time it is, mature, won't just follow every rabbit trail and step on every rake and make it easy for them, but actually force them to defend their values and defend their paradigms and processes and records, that can actually govern efficiently when given power. That is what they are concerned about. And that's why they're, you know, these people love abortion, and they're trying to abort a resistance movement right now, right in front of us.
And that is exactly the America First movement that I personally am solidly behind. The Governor DeSantis's, the Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the J.D. Vance's, you know, the people who are the next generation of actually solid leadership, not the weak, pathetic losers of the GOP of old that loved to just be in the minority party and were content to lose all the time and fundraise more. I mean, this is why some people like Ted Cruz, unfortunately, who I supported initially in 2016, by the way, and, you know, thought was great before we had some of these different metrics and these contrasts between the GOP and, you know, the version of winning that Trump has led. You know, that's why Ted Cruz is potentially not winning in Texas. I hope that he does. But, you know, there are a lot of people in Texas that aren't quite thrilled with him right now, because I think in a large part, he is part of some of that old kind of thinking of just being in the minority. And when you mentioned, Steve, the sort of stopgap to reset, you know, that was the first 4 years of Trump, because we could have had everything that a Kamala Harris administration wants to usher in starting in 2024. That, I truly believe, was the left's intention with Hillary Clinton in 2016. And they were so confident that she was going to win that they severely underestimated Donald Trump. And the fact that he actually won that election and engaged so many people who had never even considered being in politics, that is absolutely why they hate him. And that should have been our recalibration. But then you had people like Paul Ryan and the Mitt Romneys and all of these other people who themselves opposed Donald Trump. Then you had the debacle of 2020, and we really didn't get, you know, kind of this momentum going from the first 4 years of Trump that should have been the reset of the GOP. So now, moving into 2024, when you do have this, I think, tension even within conservatives of loving the policy but hating the man overall, right? And not everybody, but a lot of the old GOP. Is there a way forward to say, okay, you know, if Trump wins, this is kind of the stopgap, but moving forward, regardless of whether Trump gets in or not, I mean, we still, as a conservative movement, are going to have to deal with whatever comes after November 5th.
Agreed. If Trump loses, then we are in an existential fight, and he won't go away quietly. He won't accept defeat. He will blame everybody on the right. He'll even be right about some of the people he'll blame, like GOP Surrender Caucus stuff we were just talking about. It'll take at least a year or two to dig out from that and figure out what the path forward is. This will not be, if we lose, it will not be your traditional, we're instantly united and pissed off for the next midterm election. Won't be like that at all. There's going to be a circular firing squad that's going to make that Spider-Man finger pointing at yourself gif look like tickling winks. And that's going to take a while to process through. So let's table that. What happens if we win? What Trump represents is New York City in the 1990s. More liberal than I would like it to be, more liberal than a biblical worldview, but also a place where Bruce Wilkerson can sit there right next to Times Square and openly preach a biblical worldview and not be condemned for it. Our world, it was also a place, if your kids wanted to go to college there, you weren't necessarily freaked out about it. Many of us thought New York in the 1990s was a shield of Americana. So did the devil. That's why we had 9/11 there. Okay, so that's what Trump represents, a liberal melting pot of ideas. The biblical worldview is not dominant there, but it's also not shunned. It's at least allowed into the conversation there. A white Republican like Rudy Giuliani can defeat a black Democrat like Mayor David Dinkins, and it doesn't cause race riots. That's what Trump represents. And that gives us a chance to turn back the clock. Ministries like AFA, okay, to step into the breach for failed religious right leadership for the last generation. Churches and pastors around the country who kind of got a hint of what the future holds if they don't do their jobs, to get together, to coordinate, to form networks now where we've turned back the clock. All right, it's not a W, but we've been allowed, you know, to move the clock back to a juncture of the game where we're not as far behind as we were before, and now we've been given like a preview of what will happen if we don't do our jobs this time. that a do-over. That's what happens if Trump wins, and that's what must take place if it occurs. If he wins, and then we go right back to, well, he's going to save us all, and I'm just going to watch Fox News every night and have my mood determined by who won the phony concocted debate they came up with, and I'm not involved in anything going on in my communities. I still don't know who my state legislator is. Then we're just doomed as a civilization and as a movement at that point.
Yeah, and I think that's such an excellent point as well, that you know, in 2016, when Trump won, it was almost like we as a movement and as conservatives got a little bit, or a lot actually, too complacent and saying, oh, okay, well now let's go against our entire argument for federalism that we've been advancing, at least those of us, you know, with principles and understanding of the Constitution for years, and let's just turn to the federal government because we love Trump and we love his policies, and let's just let him, you know, save America, and we don't have to actually do the hard work. And this is why, when Roe versus Wade was overturned, we weren't prepared. And now, you know,
Excellent.
The left.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I mean, essentially, Trump actually believed our Barbara Streisand. He thought the mainstream pro-life movement was serious, took it seriously, gave them what they wanted, found out. Then we all saw they were wholly unprepared for it, and are still trying to pass federal pieces of legislation that they know have no chance of passing, while we get routed at the state level by the baby killers. Why? Because there's no money to be raised at the state level. And we don't want to decentralize the power base from Washington, D.C. And that, by the way, that's why we don't have Trump on our side this time. Right? Mm-hmm. Trump is an art of the deal guy. He thought that these massive pro-life groups had all this power and authority, and he had to do what they wanted to do. He had to cut deals with them, and so he did so in earnest. And then he delivered on his end of the bargain and saw how wholly unprepared they were. All right? Mm-hmm. They were like... For 50 years, no, Steve, we can't do personhood. You're wrong, because we have to overturn Roe. No, Steve, we can't do heartbeat bills because that we have to overturn Roe. So we finally start doing bills that would actually challenge Roe as law, and we get it overturned. And he saw this thing called the pro-life industry is a paper tiger. All they do is march in January. There's a reason why they didn't do a thing for 50 years. They won one battle. And it was over late-term abortions, and it wasn't even a ban of them. It was a ban of a method of them. And that was it. And now we have no clout, and he called our bluff. That's a great metaphor, Jenna, for what will happen if we win here and then we don't actually follow through with action on the ground. What's occurred to the pro-life industry is exactly what will happen comprehensively on the right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a cautionary tale to the right, that if we actually win this election, prevent the communists from taking over, then we can't become complacent and we can't just say, okay, well, then all of the art of the deal populace who are, you know, the godless lack of genuine morality Republicans, we'll just let them take care of everything. I mean, then we are utterly failing as a church, as Christian conservatives, to be engaged in our government system. I mean, this is why, Steve, the left is just winning at every turn. I mean, with what's going on here in my home state of Florida with the abortion amendment, Amendment 4, that is on the ballot, I mean, the left isn't even playing the game like the conservatives think that you know, we were so proud of ourselves for passing the heartbeat bill. They went directly to the state constitution, and they're saying we're going to cement a right to abortion with no definitions, and your massage therapist can tell you that in, you know, because of your mental health, you can get an abortion moments before birth. That's how extreme these parties are. And yet, with even a 60% threshold, there's a very good and real chance that might actually happen in the state of Florida. I mean, this is how they don't play to lose. They play for keeps. And if we don't change our mentality, then what are we even doing? And this stopgap, even if Trump gets elected, then we're just going to lose again 4 years down the road, because this is a machine that will not stop. So in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, how do we convince our fellow conservatives that this is actually a crisis point?
I think when Trump, I now do believe there is some level of anointing on Trump. To what end, I don't know. But I just, you cannot humanly dodge 94 felony indictments, multiple bullets, your own personality's tendency to seek out rakes to step upon, okay, and end up where he is at just by human means alone. You just simply cannot, okay?
I agree.
He has defied every natural political law of the universe. So I think these are proxies for the spiritual battle happening in America. And I think the first time that Trump ran, God used him to expose them and forced America to truly confront how much of this rot that we've let in, how much of it has overtaken our institutions, how much of it has overtaken our schools, how much of it has overtaken every vestige of our culture, and brought it all, used Trump to bring it all out into the open. All the masks now are off. But this time, I think Trump is using, God is using Trump to expose us. Your complacencies, the softness of your churches, you allowed this to happen. Your fake pro-life movement that raised all this money for all these years didn't save any babies. Okay? And then we gave you what you wanted, and you were wholly unprepared to do anything with it as a metaphor for the entirety of all your activism for the last generation. Okay? And I think ultimately you're watching a trial take place, and it's a spiritual war in the form of a trial, and a verdict is going to get rendered on November the 5th.
And I hope that that is a verdict for a just and righteous outcome. And we absolutely have to pray to that end. But Steve Dace, always so appreciate your insights, your commentary, and just your willingness to boldly speak the truth, even when I know that it hasn't been, in your financial best interest most of the time, just like me. But we'll do it anyway, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And what a sobering analysis from Steve Dace. And I think it is truly incumbent upon all Christians to genuinely pray over the next 4 weeks for this country, for the future of our nation, and not just for this election, but overall. Of course, for this election, but overall, to pray for the state of the church and of the culture. Because if the church, quite frankly, were doing its job and we were in the business of winning hearts and minds to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and truly having that transformation and regeneration of our mind and our way of thinking, we wouldn't be at this precipice in this country where even self-professed Christians are saying, well, I don't really want to talk about, homosexual marriage because, hey, what's good for you is fine. And I don't want to impose, my faith on you. And, does the Bible really say, that goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Did God really say, that was the first lie that the devil told Eve through the snake, through the serpent in the garden, was, did God really say? And she believed it. And we are in this moment, about, in my view as a young earth creationist, about 6,000 years later, roughly, doing the same thing. And we question, did God really say? And we question his plan and his purpose and his instruction manual to tell us how to best live our lives for our own good. It's not that we have rules and standards in the Bible because God wants to be this harsh taskmaster. When he talks about, when Jesus says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, that means that he is carrying the burden for us. And if we are yoked to him, then that means that we never have to question our direction. If we are truly yoked to Christ, what that means is that he leads us. And the direction that we go is in his will, because we cannot be separated from the person of truth. It's not that we are yoked to him like we are chained to a harsh taskmaster. And if we had the courage and the boldness to teach that truth and to be faithful witnesses to the truth and the person of truth, our entire culture and our entire country would reflect that. And we would not be on the brink of potentially having a communist Marxist in the highest office in the land. I mean, if our founders, coming from what they came from and why they were so intent on securing religious liberty and founding this nation on the principles and recognition of truth that our rights come from our creator, not our government, and limiting government and creating this entire constitution as a constitutional republic, if they knew that, you know, about 250 years later, this is the point we would be at, they would be horrified, frankly. They would be absolutely horrified that we would be living in a post-truth society, that we can't even recognize that truth is self-evident. I mean, that's really the bottom line here. I mean, if we approach politics and civil government and civic engagement and any conversation about morality, whether it's the topic of abortion and the sanctity of human life, which is going to be this Sunday. And I hope that everyone is going to church and has a church that is teaching specifically on that. If we approach these topics from a secular humanist playing field and a post-truth playing field, and that reality is relative, then we are losing the debate. We're losing the impact on the culture before we've even started the conversation. Because if we approach any of these topics from a, well, you know, this is my opinion, this is my faith, but, you know, hey, you don't have to believe in, you know, the things that I do because I can't push my faith on you. We are just borrowing from the leftist narrative and saying that truth and reality is our own social construct. And then we're totally losing the argument before we even begin. That's why we're losing the conversation on abortion, by the way, because we're having all these conversations about viability and whether, you know, this should be a 12-week, 8-week, you know, 15-week federal ban versus state level, you know, whatever. That's, none of that is actually relevant to the point that life clearly begins at conception, scientifically. That's a scientific fact. And that it is not for an arbitrary decision maker of the general populace, and whether it's the federal government, the state government, legislature, the people voting on a constitutional amendment, that man himself and the collective majority judgment can impose an arbitrary standard of when human life is valuable and when it is not valuable. At the beginning stages of life, any point during natural life, all the way up until natural death. But we have given over these conversations and the definitions and the foundation to a post-truth society. And that's why we find ourselves in this moment that Steve Davis rightly says is basically a civil war, because a lot of the Republicans and the conservatives don't even know what it is that we're actually fighting for. They think that it's just about, you know, winning or possibly just losing, and then they don't even care. They just care about fundraising. Oh, this is just about money. This is just about making sure that I have a job at the end of the day. They're not actually wanting to be culture warriors. They do not want to be world changers. The left, actually way more than most people on the right, actually want to change the world. That's what you see at the World Economic Forum. They have a vision of reality that they want to impose, and they will do absolutely anything that it takes to impose that view. I mean, imagine if a coalition of Christians in this nation, if everybody who even self-identified as a Christian had half the will to follow through and to say, I actually want to change the culture and I want to change the world for Christ, and I am willing to do whatever it takes, obviously within the bounds of the law and the Constitution, because that's part of our standard. I am willing to do whatever it takes, even self-sacrifice, even if I earn less money, you know, even whatever it takes. I want to make sure that this culture reflects the truth and we continue to be a moral and upright society, or maybe get back to it. I don't know if we're actually even a moral and upright society now. I don't think that we really are. But that's the question going into this election. Do you want to preserve and protect the America that is toward a more perfect union, preserve and protect liberty, or let us be taken over by communists? That's really the question. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Think about it over this weekend. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.